How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey everyone, welcome to the latest Rain and Jays podcast with me, John Corrales, and my partner, Jay King from MassLive.com. We are fresh off a very good week for the Boston Celtics. Back-to-back wins against the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets, and a huge blowout win against the Brooklyn Nets, erasing a sour taste from a disappointing Dallas Mavericks loss. Jay King, the Nets are so bad. I love it.
They're so bad. We talk about it every week, how bad they are. And finally, get to play them in a regular season game. And it was everything Celtics fans could have ever hoped for. A 25-point victory, an absolute dominant victory. The second quarter offense was just ridiculous.
Insane.
They hit their last 9 shots, including 6 threes. Just steamrolled the Nets. I mean, the Nets bench, their starting lineup isn't that bad.
No, it's actually not.
But then when you get to their bench, it's
horrible.
Like, oh my goodness.
Grease
and
fire.
Especially against Boston's bench, which is actually one of the best in the league.
Yeah. The numbers last night are pretty insane. As Brian Robb pointed out on Twitter last night, 39 assists for the Celtics. That's the most assists they've had in a game since December 2008. That was that awesome 2008 squad where, I mean, everything was clicking. So 39 assists. By the way, 39 Celtics assists, 35 Brooklyn field goals made last night. So more assists than Brooklyn field goals. The Celtics shot 51 of 87. That's the best percentage, 58.6% in the league this season. They have now climbed to the league's best defense, a 95 defensive rating, ties them with the Spurs. They have the fourth best net rating, better than the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Celtics are awesome. Let's forget about the fact that it's November. Let's forget about the fact that it's not even Thanksgiving yet.
It's crazy because they're 7-5, and all the losses are close, and all the wins are by 13 plus. It's like every win is just a blowout. And they're rolling teams when they beat them. And it's one of those things where their defense is always, always good. And then when their offense gets rolling, they just put teams away.
Yeah,
which is weird because this Celtics team, you know, for a long time, it was like, okay, they don't have much margin for error. Well, kind of that defense is giving them a margin for error when they're bad offensively. They're still sticking to games. They stayed with the Spurs. They stayed with the Hawks for a half before starting to hit some shots and pulling away. They stayed with the Thunder for a half before doing the same thing. Like, that defense is so good that it's finally given them a margin for error.
It's unbelievable. And you see that it's not that they're just getting stops. They're ripping the ball out of people's hands. They're getting so many steals. Let's just look at last night's. So I'm going to pull up last night's box score. How many steals did they have last night? Another 10. So, I mean, they forced 20 turnovers. 21 points off of those turnovers. So, that's insane. Just the types of turnovers that they're getting. The live ball turnovers leading to points, leading to leakouts. And it just... Let me bring us back to reality a little bit, because I don't want to sit here just, you know, going nuts.
Number one, John. Reality is number one.
Let's bring us back to reality just a little bit. The Dallas game. A little disappointing there, because I think what we've seen and what we can determine from the Celtics team is they are really, really good when they try. But they're not a team that can slack like they did against the Dallas Mavericks and get away with it. And I think that's the difference between them and these other teams that they're hanging around with. You know, I mean, look, they're hanging around with elite company. So when I sit there and compare them to the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs, I mean, that's the type of company they're in defensively. So, but those teams, the Spurs can slack and make up for it. The Golden State Warriors certainly can play poorly and then, you know, like they did against the Clippers. I mean, they could play horribly and then come back and shoot. So obviously the Celtics are not that. And I think the Dallas game gave us that little dose of reality that if the Celtics want to come out and, you know, not be crisp on their defensive rotations, if they are slacking at all, they will get burned. So it's all rainbows and puppy dogs right now for the Boston Celtics, except for that Dallas game, which I think is just a cautionary tale.
Yeah, and even in that game, though, they had that first quarter where they were just very dominant against Dallas. And I think what's crazy here is, I mean, you look at that stretch of schedule. It goes Atlanta at Oklahoma City, at Houston, Dallas, and then Brooklyn. Brooklyn we always thought was going to be a win. But those other four games are tough games. And the fact that they ended up with four double-digit victories coming to the number one defense in the entire NBA after that stretch is very impressive. Yes. And, I mean, that defense is legit. We've been talking about it, how it's kind of like an underrated thing. Now it's like people are noticing the Celtics defense is a force. 12 games into the season, 15% of the season is down. They are forcing turnovers at a rate that hasn't been matched in almost 20 years. If you go to NBA.com, their database for opposing turnover percentage goes back to 2000-2001, and no team has ever come within 1% of what the Celtics are doing right now. Like they force teams over like it's high school, and yeah. Like they're it's crazy. It's Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley. Those guys are just forces right now, and they have their defense is like built with their guards first, which is weird because a lot of defenses are otherwise, where you've got the rim protector that is kind of the anchor. Their anchors are their guards, and everything is built around them and how good they are and how quick they are. And those guys just disrupt everything. I mean, there was one possession against Brooklyn where Marcus Smart picked up Bogdanović full court, and Brooklyn was having Bogdanović run the point, which is a bad, bad mistake when Marcus Smart is guarding him. He hounded him till half court, forced him to give it up, like followed him around a screen, literally did not give him more than 3 inches of space the entire possession. Followed him around a screen, followed him to the top of the key, got in his shirt as soon as he caught the ball again. And Bogdanović would kind of like backed up and was like, oh man, like, this is bad news, and just traveled. Yeah. And it's like that's what the Celtics are doing to people right now. They are just attacking. Their defense just attacks people. And it's fun to watch.
I was going to bring up the Jay Crowder steal. So Jay Crowder misses a corner three. Brook Lopez gets the long rebound on the opposite side and casually just hands it over to, like, he's going to give it to Jarrett Jack. Like, okay, we got the stop. Here we go. Meanwhile, Crowder shoots in from that corner, rips it right away, right out of Jack's hands, and lays it up. Like, that's the type of effort play that leads to easy points. And that's not the type of play you normally see in the NBA. Like, you don't – and that's why Brooke Lopez just casually just said, here you go. Here we go. We're going to start our offense now. But the Celtics aren't the, oh, I missed a shot, I'm just going to run back type of team right now. And sometimes they are. But when you're giving that much effort throughout the entire court, that's taking a lot of teams by surprise. And there were quotes after the Houston game where they were saying, like, this is what we do. Teams, other teams, they don't expect this. NBA teams don't expect you to be everywhere all the time. They want casual games. They want, after you miss, they want to be able to just jog up the floor and set their offense and let's go. But the Celtics are just everywhere. Like you said, in your shirt, in your shorts. As soon as you take the ball out of bounds, they're there. And that's what makes the Celtics defense so good. It's the effort. If the Celtics don't give that effort, then they can be bad. We could have bad results. But right now, like you said, reality is best defense in the league. So good for that. Let's briefly touch on the Marcus Smart injury, because he left the game last night with a bruised knee. Do you have any insight as to how serious that might be?
So he had an MRI after the game. It didn't look too bad. He just bumped his left knee when he was going back in transition, trying to stop. I forget who it was on the Nets. So I'd be surprised if it was bad. When he was limping off the court in the locker room, he gave the thumbs up. I would be surprised if it's a bad injury based on that, just because it was knee-to-knee contact. Those are normally just bruises. It's not like it was a non-contact injury where he went down in a heap. Jay Crowder said he thought Smart would be fine. So hopefully he is, because obviously he's an important part.
Right. And it's interesting. That brings us to another discussion that we've been having, the starting lineups again. And so Marcus Smart got hurt, and then Avery Bradley got hurt, and the result was starting Isaiah Thomas. And he's been the starter, and now it looks like he's the starter. And now going into last night, not like it really mattered much, but, you know, like you said, the Brooklyn starting five isn't bad. In fact, the Brooklyn starting five net rating has been near the top of the league. So I thought maybe going in, it would be wise to start Bradley and have the Smart Bradley Crowder combo on Hollis Jefferson, Jack, and Joe Johnson, and really just make their lives hell. But obviously, Isaiah Thomas got the start. Obviously, it worked out fine. And Brad Stevens has talked about having the starters pretty much remain what they are right now, with Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley maybe rotating based on matchups. So is this where we're settling for this season? Have we finally found some sort of stability with the starting lineups, that Jared Sullinger is our starting center, which was unthinkable a month ago. Jared Sullinger is our starting four. Amir Johnson is our starting five. And it's Smart, Crowder, and Isaiah Thomas or Avery Bradley, depending on what the matchups are, but probably Isaiah Thomas. Is that where we are right now?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, you know, you and I have talked about this before, where we thought Thomas would be better off coming off the bench. And that's because the smaller lineups gave him space. The Celtics aren't playing always as small as they did last year. A huge part of this, the bench has been awesome even without Thomas in it. Like, even when he's not in that second unit, it's like Avery Bradley's knocking down shots, or Evan Turner is, or Kelly Olynyk is diamond people up. Like, that second unit, and I think it's just because the Celtics are so deep and they don't really have a drop-off in talent, that second unit is almost every night providing an advantage, and a big advantage for Boston, and even with Thomas in the starting lineup. So to me, that's their way that they've finally found to have offense when Thomas is on the bench is to put him in the starting lineup. And so I think it's working right now. I think finally they've found the recipe, and because we're morons, you and I, it's exactly what we said should not be what they tried. So I do think it's working. I don't think some people are saying Avery Bradley, or some people think Avery Bradley is like freed now that he's on the second unit. I don't think that's the case. I think he's just had four good games. His usage rate has really boomed since he hit the bench. I'm not convinced, A, that will continue to be the case, and B, that if it is the case, it would be a good thing necessarily. He's never been an efficient scorer before. Like, he can shoot from outside. You don't want Avery Bradley to have like a huge usage rate. I want to say his true shooting percentage last year was like 50.7%, which is significantly less than average. So now I think he's playing better, and he has improved. He's pushing more of his shots to the arc, but like, I don't want him to have that huge usage rate, and I think that'll fall when he's not playing so well.
Yeah, I mean, he had a huge first half against Dallas, and then he didn't have a great second half against Dallas. He's been playing well. I mean, what are you going to say? He's been playing well off the bench, so
yeah,
you might as well ride it. I can sit here and try to make my arguments, and I think they're valid arguments, but what am I going to say? Am I going to argue with something that has worked over the past few games? You know, shocking. Brad Stevens might know a little bit more about basketball than I do, but
yeah,
I'm going to cut you off. I'm not going to let you finish that. I don't know. I think there might be something to the Avery Bradley being more, not necessarily freed, but with that second unit, the shots that he's taking, he's not taking them away from anybody. He doesn't feel like he should be, not that he ever did, but when you're in the starting lineup and you've got other guys there, I mean, it's tough to go out there and take a bunch of those shots. Avery Bradley's not your number one option, but on the second unit, everybody's the number one option. There's no one guy that should be taking more shots than the other. So if somebody's hot, go ahead and keep on shooting. You know that. So that it's almost like ride the hot hand on that second unit. If Kelly Olynyk is hitting a bunch of shots, then they're going to keep feeding him. If it's Jerebko, or if it's David Lee, who we've written off and has come back, and obviously, of course, because we wrote him off, has come back and had a few great performances. So what the hell? What the hell do we know? Maybe we should just sign off right now and say, screw it. We're done.
Yeah, I do want to say this, too. One thing about Avery Bradley, he's getting like two or three easy buckets every game off turnovers. Every game, like against the Brooklyn Nets, they hit a couple threes in a row. Isaiah Thomas hit a couple threes. And then next two Brooklyn possessions, Bradley cheats off his man at the perfect time because he's guarding Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who cannot shoot whatsoever, and picks a guy's pocket and goes out and gets a layup at the other end. And he's getting some of those every single night, like easy buckets. And those are buckets he didn't always get in the past. So I think the Celtics have really stressed not just – they're really good at not just forcing turnovers, but then turning it into offense at the other end. Like, when they get those turnovers, they are flying down the other end and converting. And they weren't always good in transition last year, transition offense. So that's been really promising to see. And I think that's a reason why they haven't had as many droughts lately as they did last season and even at the beginning of this year.
It's funny. I remember one point during last night's game. It was, I don't know why, it was particularly quiet. Brooklyn had the ball. Hollis-Jefferson got it, I think, off a pick and roll. He came over the top. And I just heard, I think it was Amir Johnson say, "Let him shoot." It was just really funny. That is a tiny bit deflating when you're a player and you hear people say, "Nah, let him shoot. That's okay. We're good with that." Avery Bradley, a couple of things. It's really when you're a shooter, when you're on offense, and you know this for sure. When you get a couple of layups, when you see the ball go through the hoop, it's really, it gives you that boost of confidence. It's really a lot easier mentally to get that shot going when you get a couple of steals, when you get a couple of layups like that. So that's one thing about Avery Bradley. The other thing, or a couple other things, his defense really has picked up. I remember last year, one of the storylines from last year was, man, Avery Bradley's defense has dropped off a little bit. And there were the whispers that his defensive play wasn't quite up to that quote-unquote Avery Bradley level. This year, probably because he's got more help and he doesn't have to do as much, it's more of a team swarming defense, that is helping what you're saying, the getting the layups, getting the steals and the layups. And one last thing, he's going backdoor a lot more this year. Last year, I don't remember seeing a whole lot of backdoor cuts for Avery Bradley. This year, we're starting to see it again, going backdoor, getting some easy baskets that way. So it's almost like back to basics for Avery Bradley. Getting the defense, getting the steals, cutting backdoor, getting some easy shots that way. That's an easy 6 or 8 points right there for Bradley. Then he hits a few threes, boom, he's scoring 15, 16, 18, 20 off the bench. So it's nice to see. And I think when last week we were talking about Avery Bradley's development, what can he be? This is like the ceiling for him, or the high end of what he can be. Play your defense, get some steals, cut back door, get an easy basket or two, and then the shooting will come. He's a streaky shooter, so on some nights he'll go out there and drop 25. Some nights won't be so much, but if he's doing those other things, he'll still be very productive on the offensive end.
Yeah, definitely. This chat reminded me, because it made me think of the Rockets game where the Celtics defense was so good. What did you think of the Kevin McHale firing?
Oh, yeah. You know, we didn't talk about that. That bothered me. It bothered me a lot. A coach getting fired in November is, I mean, unless you've had a few losing seasons and you've finally gotten some players and it's still not coming together, like, there are very few instances of coaches being fired this early that I really agree with. I hate what happened in Houston, because I feel like I put most of this blame on James Harden. I think Harden quit on McHale, and he kind of led the charge, and people followed Harden's lead. And it reminds me of what Doc Rivers said when he first got here, and they first, you know, they got the, you know, Kevin McHale. When your star player buys in, it's a lot easier for everyone else to buy in. And I'll never forget Doc saying that, because Kevin McHale bought in. Kevin Garnett bought in immediately with the Celtics, and they took his identity and they followed his lead and executed everything that Doc wanted to do. And it worked beautifully, obviously. Once your best player is no longer engaged, then you're screwed. And I think James Harden, for whatever reason, quit on Kevin McHale, and because you can't fire the players, and because Dwight Howard certainly isn't going to step up and be a leader, McHale got shafted. So I think it's probably better for him to be out of there in the long run. I don't believe in that Houston team. I don't think they're going to be the contenders that people think they're going to be. So I think Kevin can just go, hopefully work for TNT, because I love him being an analyst, collect his $12 million, get an extra paycheck from TNT, and then in a couple of years, take over somebody else's program. So, I think there are teams I think there are teams in the NBA right now that he can help. So, we'll see where it goes, but I think there are teams in the NBA that he can help right now.
To me, the weird thing about it was you give him 11 games, just 11 games, after he took a Western Conference team to the conference finals.
Yeah.
And that team, I mean, Dwight Howard was injured for a lot of the season. They didn't have a ton of talent compared to the other Western Conference teams. Like, that was an overachieving team last year. They really shouldn't have made the Western Conference Finals. And I think I don't blame Harden as much as you do, because I look at just his entire life situation. Like, he was dating Khloe Kardashian, and then the whole Lamar Odom thing happened just before the season. Like, that is a vicious, vicious thing to go through right before a season. And obviously, like, you would like him to still play defense and try on the court and things like that. But that is a huge, huge extenuating circumstance.
Yes, I would like him to try on the court.
That's, yes.
I would like him to try.
And I also think it's just a weird fitting roster now. Whereas last year it was like Harden and a lot of guys who tried to defend. Now it's like you add Ty Lawson in the mix. He's not a defender. You add Marcus Thornton to the mix, also not a defender. And you lose guys like Prigioni, who played D, Josh Smith, who, you know, for all of his flaws, does play some defense. So I think the whole, entire mix was just different there. Kevin McHale hated that team. Yeah. It was so clear he could not stand coaching that roster. What their effort against the Celtics was so abysmal. From the start of that game, like, they weren't getting back on defense. It was unbelievable. And like, so I think he's better off not coaching that team. He can go enjoy himself, be on TNT, as you said. Maybe join the Celtics, because Danny Ainge has offered him a standing position. Tyler Zeller will soon become the post god. But yeah, so we agree. McHale didn't deserve to get fired. I will also say this. I don't think they were ever sold he was the best coach for that team. I don't think, even when they were going deep, and I'm not sold either. Like, as good a job as I think he did last season, like, he's a good coach. There are great coaches out there, and I don't know who's a great coach that doesn't have a job right now. I don't know. I don't think he was a great coach.
So let's play a little game here. If you could fire any coach in the NBA right now and replace him with Kevin McHale, what situation do you think would work for him?
Ooh, if I could fire any coach in the NBA,
yeah,
that is one heck of a power. Who would I fire? I don't know. That's it. Who fire?
I would put I'd like to see McHale coach the Wizards and fire Randy Whitman.
And then run the Morey ball in Washington? Because yeah,
I think Whitman, I'm not a big fan of Whitman as a coach. And I think Washington has a talented roster, and kind of similar to the style that Houston was playing. I think if you put McHale in that situation with those young players, with McHale's, you know, pedigree, his history, and I think they would respond well to him. If I could put him on any current NBA team to coach a current NBA team, I'd put him in Washington.
There you go. See you, Whitman. You're done.
You know, not that I advocate anybody losing their job, but I guess I just did.
But hey, as these coaches, when they lose their jobs, they still get paid. So.
They get paid. It's not a big deal. It's not like they go broke. They're still getting paid.
My favorite coach firing was when Mike Brown got fired after four games. And there was a picture of him from later the same day he got fired at like a Chick-fil-A or something, just like ear to ear grin, like so happy. He's like, I'm done. I don't have to coach Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant anymore. Like, get me out of here. Let me go have my peace. I'm still going to get paid. I can go enjoy my family for the first time in years. Like, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. That smile was awesome.
Yeah. I don't want to go too far down this road, but Dwight Howard, I think, as much as I haven't mentioned him as far as to blame, he seems to be around when coaches get fired a lot.
I will say this. McHale singled him out as the only guy on the entire roster who tried consistently on defense and was a solid defender. So I will give Dwight that credit. He was the one guy who Kevin McHale singled out. So
hey,
let's not blame Dwight.
I'm just saying. Not saying. Just saying.
Back to a team with a great defense and tries all the time, though. The Boston Celtics.
Back to the Celtics. Why don't we get to some of these Twitter questions? Because we've got a bunch of them. Let's go with Adam Brewdaddy, at Brewdaddy. Going back to the Brooklyn thing, do you think the Brooklyn picks the next 2 years will be as valuable as this one? I don't see Brooklyn getting any better. They're a completely abysmal situation, and we said this in the last show, so if you really want to recap, go back and listen to the last show. They're in no way that they can improve. They've got nobody to trade. They've got nobody worth giving up as far as from another team's perspective. They got no draft picks. So at what point will the Nets be better? I don't see them being better anytime soon. So I think the next two years are still going to be pretty damn valuable.
I don't think it'll be as valuable as this year. So like this year's Nets team is atrocious. And next year, they'll have some cap space. They won't sign anybody great, I don't think, but they will upgrade that horrendous bench. Like, they won't be giving minutes, I don't think, to guys like Andrea Bargnani next year, although he does have a player option, so he might be back anyway. But I don't think...
I love it.
I don't think they'll be quite as bad. Like, they don't have hope to get a lot better. Those will be lottery picks, I'm convinced. Yeah. But I don't think they'll be like bottom of the basement.
But they're still going to be in that mix, though. This is going to be a bad year. And if the Philadelphia 76ers weren't still abysmal, then the Nets would be the worst team in the league, I think. But what the hell is up with the 76ers?
We can't get you headed down this path. We have to direct you somewhere else. Because you will go and hate on Hinkie for the next hour and a half, John. Just let it go. Let it go. It's okay. They're terrible. You could argue with everything, a lot of things they've done. I do like Jahlil Okafor. I do like New Orleans Noel. I do not like a lot of the rest of their roster. Yeah, we're moving on, John. We can't let you go there.
Couple more questions. I love these names. GZ Hamilton at Slop Dizzle. Who has impressed you the most so far this season? And we got another question at this point. Who is your team MVP? One could make an argument for four or five of these guys. So let's name a 15% of the season team MVP.
15% of the season team MVP. Yeah. I mean, I give Isaiah Thomas. I don't know.
What was that sound?
I think I'm going to give it to Isaiah Thomas because he is their best player.
Okay.
In my mind, I almost want to give it to Jay Crowder because
that's going to be my answer.
He's the most important to their identity to me because he's the one who's leading the league in steals. He's the one who can guard any number of positions. And he doesn't always hit shots, but that dude is tough, and that dude changes games Every night.
That's my pick. And so you're going to go with Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, I think I'll still go with Isaiah, but Crowder's up there for me. Jared Sullinger's had a great start. Like, there's a lot of evenness, so it's not an obvious choice.
Yeah, look, Isaiah Thomas is sure, and that's a great choice for the 15% MVP. We got to get like a 15% of a trophy for this guy. I'm definitely going to say Jay Crowder, because I don't think this defense is anywhere near as good without Crowder in there. He's that ingredient. For the Simpsons fans out there, I'm going to compare this team to the Flaming Mo. You're a Simpsons fan, right?
I have no idea what the Flaming Mo is, to be as embarrassed as I am to say that. I don't know what the Flaming Mo is.
Tweet me, I'm looking for a new host. Continue to disappoint me, Jay King. Okay, Simpsons fans out there will know this. I'll keep this short. The Flaming Mo is the drink. Homer creates this drink when there's no alcohol in the house. He just throws a bunch of stuff together, and he has a drink, and it's okay. But when he pours the cough syrup in and lights it on fire, it becomes the best drink in the world. So the fire, once you light the Flaming Mo on fire, it changes the drink. So the Celtics are the Flaming Mo. Jay Crowder is the fire. And Marcus Smart would still be the defender that he is. Avery Bradley certainly would be. Amir Johnson certainly would be. But Jay Crowder makes it all work. And quite honestly, I think it's Jay Crowder and his defense that allows the Celtics to slide Isaiah Thomas into the starting lineup. Because if Jay Crowder didn't exist, you couldn't put Isaiah Thomas in there because the defense would entirely fall apart. You would have to start Bradley and Smart, and you'd have to keep Isaiah Thomas on the bench. But with Crowder in there, you can put Thomas in, and you still have those two tenacious defenders, and Crowder just comes in from all angles and can guard so many people. So considering that this team has the best defense in the league, we'll continue to harp on that, the best defense in the league, I think Jay Crowder is the straw that stirs that defensive drink. So he's my MVP. 15% MVP. I can't wait to see who our 30% MVP is going to be.
Counter argument is that the offense isn't great, and part of that is because they play a lot of minutes on the wing to guys like Crowder, who are limited and can't shoot and don't have a huge skill set. And I'm not saying I'm not demeaning Crowder by any means, but like there are a lot of wings that are more skilled than Boston's starting duo of Marcus Smart and Jake Crowder. There aren't a lot of wings that are more physical, that's for sure.
Where I'm supposed to go all like Felger or Tanguay on you and yell and call you stupid?
No, this is where like we kind of agree, but I'm just pointing out the other side to it.
All right. I still don't get my radio show host playbook yet. I'm trying to figure out when I'm supposed to overreact and call you names.
I'm okay with it if you do. I won't like scream. I won't go Minahan on you and like scream at you and call you names right back. I would probably just take it, maybe laugh a little bit.
Okay, next question from Neutral Spin. At Neutral Spin, will we see more of Smart posting up? Could that become his calling card offensively going forward? I mean, I like Smart in the post sometimes when he's got the matchup. And this brings us up. Let me add this from Justin Hunter, who emailed the question to me since we're talking about Marcus Smart. He breaks down the numbers, actually. So last year, per 36 minutes, Smart's scoring attempts broke down like this: 5.5 three-point attempts, 4 two-point attempts, 2.5 free throws per game, total of 9.5 field goal attempts, and 12 overall scoring chances. This year, it's about the same: 5.5 three-point attempts, but 6 two-point attempts and 4.5 free throws per game. So it's a total of about 12 field goal attempts, 16, a little more than 16 overall scoring chances. So the question here: Smart being more aggressive offensively, still taking the same amount of threes, but he's taking more twos and he's getting a few more free throws, which is something that we talked about earlier in the season that Smart needed to do. So combining those two questions with Smart, adding a little bit, a tiny bit of a post-up game once in a while, and then being more aggressive, are we seeing this evolution, a very coach-prodded evolution of Marcus Smart's offensive game?
Yes. It's not a night-to-night thing yet. This is actually something I talked about with Markel Brown, Smart's former teammate at Nets Shootaround. So we were talking about the Russell. So Westbrook was like, yeah, you know what, guys? Don't get it twisted. I do this 82 games a year. And it was because Smart had that awesome game against Oklahoma City. But Russell was like, guys, like, I'm a superstar. I do this all the time. Like, don't talk to me about his special night. This is something I do every game. Markel Brown said, just give him a chance, Russell. Wait until he gets as many years as you do in the league, and he'll be doing it every night too. So Smart is still young. Smart is obviously far more advanced on the defensive end than the offensive end right now. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the hints of the evolution that we wanted. Like that Thunder game. They went to him in the post three straight possessions. He scored on Westbrook. He hit, I believe it was Isaiah Thomas for a wide open jumper. And then he hit a face up, like step back for a face up three on Anthony Morrow. And we didn't see that last year. We didn't see. And then against Brooklyn, they go to the high pick and roll with Smart running it while Isaiah Thomas stands in the corner. And Thomas hits two threes off that. So we're seeing all the ways that he is expanding his game. And he hasn't like a consistent stride yet. But we're seeing the signs and we're seeing the expansions. And it's all promising so far. Because even though he hasn't like really started to hit that flow, he's doing more than he ever did last year. And they're giving him more and more responsibilities, which shows they're obviously more comfortable with what he can do.
Yeah, I like it. And I set out some expectations for Marcus Smart earlier in the season, and he's really progressing. And I think we are seeing it beyond the post-up game. I think going to the basket, getting to the line a little bit more. Now, he's not doing it as much as we'd like. But again, he's in his second year, and he's still kind of working through what works, what doesn't. He's doing a much better job as the point guard. And look, he's also been hurt. He's also played next to Avery Bradley, and now he's playing next to Isaiah Thomas. So a little bit of a difference between how they play. I think this is a nice sign, and it's very, very encouraging for the Marcus Smart, but that we're going to see when the Celtics are contenders, because I do think the Celtics are going to be contenders in the next couple of years. You know, not next year, we'll see, but the year after they certainly should be. And that's like last week when we were talking about what's Avery Bradley going to be on a contending team, what's Marcus Smart going to be on a contending team. I think Marcus Smart is going to be one of the cornerstones of a contending team. You know, I think he's going to be your starting point guard, and I think he's going to have learned by year four how to get to the free throw line more and get five or six easy points and how to pass off of that and how to, you know, maximize. Like, not just take the threes that he's taking. He's taking five threes a game, but some of them I still don't like. I think his shot selection is going to evolve a little bit more. So it's all very encouraging. I'll leave it at that. It's all very encouraging with Marcus Smart. I like what he's doing. And I think that it's a concerted effort by the staff and by Marcus to grow his game.
Yeah. All promising there. One question I have for you. I asked this on Twitter a few days ago. How many teams in the East do you think are better than the Celtics right now?
I will say Cleveland is. Right now, Miami is. And then, I don't know, Chicago, I want to say Chicago is, but, you know, Derrick Rose keeps getting hurt. I'll say Chicago might be slightly better, but I could easily be convinced that they're not. So I'll put the Celtics at three or four in the East.
No Atlanta? You think Atlanta is behind?
Yeah. I did overlook Atlanta. Okay. I'll say fourth. I'll say the Celtics are the fourth best team in the East. At this moment, you know.
Yeah. And I think all those teams, I mean, I don't know whether they're fourth. They might be behind Toronto. There are a few other teams that are like in that mix. But the Celtics, through 12 games, like, they still have their flaws. They're still not a powerful offensive team. They still can't shoot all the time. But they are good enough to where I don't think a run to the conference finals is, like, completely out of the question. Ooh. As long as they avoid Cleveland. I mean, I'm not saying I expect them to make the conference finals. I'm saying, is it completely out of the question? Because after Cleveland, the East is so wide open. Miami is really talented. I don't trust them to stay healthy. And then after them, it's like Chicago,
right,
Atlanta, just flawed teams. And the Celtics have a great defense and a deep team. And some of that isn't ideal for playoff basketball when the rotations are shorter and their depth won't be such a huge advantage. But the East is crazy. The East, like, anything can happen there. I'm not convinced a run to the Eastern Conference Finals is out of the question. I wouldn't predict them to make it there. I don't know if they'll get out of the first round, but it's not out of the question.
I'm trying to figure out a way to spin this. Jay King says Celtics could get to the Conference Finals. Is it out of the question? No, it's not out of the question. I still, after all of this, I still think that the playoffs are more about your top-level talent.
But how many teams have top-level talent in the East?
No, I get it. But I still trust, like, Atlanta to like, they're like, I still trust Horford to make shots down the stretch more than I trust most guys on the Celtics. Just look at the Dallas game. Look at how they fell apart down the stretch in that game. I still just say that because the Celtics don't have that guy that can go and just create on his own and score like you need in the playoffs, that's going to make a deep playoff run tough. Out of the question? No, nothing's out of the question. But, and I see your point that most of these teams aren't like that top level talent. They don't have a lot of that top level talent. Oh, man. Yeah, this is tough because it might just depend on like injuries or something. I don't know. Don't get me feeling like this team's going to go to the conference finals, Jay, because I don't want to get that feeling in my head. I don't want to make that a thing that I'm like, well, maybe. I don't even want to think that far down the road. We haven't even had our Thanksgiving turkey yet.
Headline: Rain and Jay's podcast says Celtics are one LeBron injury away from a finals berth.
So, who do you think we match up better against? The Golden State Warriors or the San Antonio Spurs? Let's start breaking it down.
Good luck beating the Warriors, guys. Good luck with that.
Oh, boy.
That team is unbelievable. They are just special. That is a special team. I don't think people gave them enough credit last year when they won 67 games and just blitzed through the Western Conference Final. Obviously, they missed some of like the top Western Conference teams in the playoffs. That team is so good, and they're better this year. They still feel just like that 2009 '99 Celtics team to me before KG went down. That team was one of the best teams in recent NBA history, and it got destroyed because of that KG injury. And Golden State has that same feel. Like, for whatever reason, they didn't take their foot off the pedal. Like, they still think they have something to prove every night. They still have that, like, edge to them. Like, they didn't win.
Because so many people leading up to this season started saying, well, they got lucky. Like, that Doc Rivers thing, like that.
But I kind of agreed with Doc. Like, they did avoid some of the top guys in the West. He wasn't saying, like, they were lucky. Every title team has luck. And he's admitted that the Boston team that won had luck. So for me, that was, like, not disrespect. But they obviously took it as disrespect.
They took it that way. You know how it goes, man. Any little thing that you can say other than, wow, that was a great team, they are very deserving champions, anything short of that will get them pissed off. That's just how it is. So when you sit there and you say, well, you know, they kind of got lucky. They didn't have to face the Spurs or the Clippers. It comes off as, dude, you lost. There's a reason they didn't have to face you guys, because you didn't make it there. Like, that to me, I understand what you're saying, but a little bit, a tiny bit of self-awareness, a tiny bit of perspective to say that's not luck. The luck in what was, you didn't, you know, Mike Conley was hurt. They didn't face certain teams at their best. You know, they did catch a couple of breaks, but then they took advantage of their breaks. But to say they didn't have to face the Spurs or the Clippers because neither of those teams got to the conference finals, that comes off as very asinine. And then, of course, then they take it as, well, screw you, we'll show you. And I don't want to make it seem like some off-season slights are what's fueling this. What are they, 13-0 now?
14-0.
So that they're 14-0 because they're a damn good basketball team. They have a little bit more of an edge because people started saying that they were somehow lucky champions. And so I think there's a little something extra there, but they're still an amazing team. And amazing matchup problems. How do you play Draymond Green at the five every night? Like, how do you combat that? It's and obviously Steph Curry is out of this world, playing at a level that, God, maybe like two or three guys have ever played at. So
the other night they beat the Clippers. He had 40 points. Like, he's on ESPN getting his post-game interview, and his stat line is underneath 40 points, 6 of 14 from 3, like, however many assists he had. And he says, in all seriousness, I've got to play a lot better than that. Like, all right, Steph, whatever you say, man. They're stupid. They're stupid.
They are fun to watch. It's not that they're not just good. They're really entertaining. They're
sleep ruining good. I don't get any sleep anymore because whenever they're playing and the Celtics aren't, or even when the Celtics are. Last night I left the TD Garden after my first story so that I could get back to my apartment and watch the end of the Warriors game while I continued working.
Yeah.
Like that's how good they are.
Of course. You can't miss. I actually fell asleep at halftime of the Clippers game and woke up. I was like, well, they were down 15 at halftime or something like that. And I ended up falling asleep. And, of course, I wake up and I do my same thing I do every day, put on NBA TV. And, well, the Warriors streak continues. Like, oh, man, how did they do that? So, amazing stuff. Okay, let's get back to the Twitter question so we can wrap this up. Alex asks, can we get a running hashtag to get Isaiah Thomas into the All-Star game?
I don't think he's going to need a hashtag. I think as long as the Celtics continue to play well, he's going to be in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, to be fair, I haven't looked around the Eastern Conference landscape, but you've got Kyrie Irving hurt. You've got Derrick Rose not being Derrick Rose. As far as guards go, I mean, Isaiah Thomas is up there, and you're hearing him get more respect. Like Lionel Hollins called him a star before the game. Draymond Green's tweeting like people need to recognize Isaiah Thomas. People know that he's really good, and I think, I mean, the Celtics are playing well enough, I think, right now, if they keep it up, that they're going to get one All-Star. And
will they get two?
No, probably not. And I think it would be Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's no way a team can be this good and not have an All-Star.
I mean, John, they're 7-5. Like, it's not like – like I know their net rating and defense, all that stuff is awesome. They're 7-5 right now. Like,
but
They're good enough to have an All-Star, and Isaiah Thomas should be
right.
It.
Right, right. And their schedule kind of eases up. They should go on a little bit of a run. By the time All-Star matters, they're not going to be just hovering above 500. They shouldn't be. Okay, we're going into the season thinking that they might be below 500 by Thanksgiving, and they're not. So when it matters, when it comes down to All-Star time, January, you know, they're going to be, I think they're going to be good enough where people say, well, the Celtics need at least one All-Star. And then you start wondering if, you know, how some of these other guys play. If you sit there and say, you throw like a Jay Crowder at the end of the bench as an injury replacement or something. I don't know. That's my green goggle answer. I think Isaiah Thomas is going to be an All-Star.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jay Crowder has no shot, even though he's had a really good season.
Hater. one more.
No, he just doesn't put up the stats. You have to put up.
I know what you mean.
Unless you're Draymond Green and people know, like, you are crushing basketball regardless of your stats, then you need the stats, and Jay Crowder doesn't have them. And I do think he's had a huge impact so far, but he's not going to make the All-Star team, sadly.
That's fine. We'll see. We'll see, Jay King. Jerk. Idiot.
99 problems and making the All-Star team is one. And not making the All-Star team is one.
One more from Brew Daddy. Would you trade Evan Turner and Derek Lee for Joakim Noah? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, Joakim Noah no longer like moves the needle for me. He used to be a great player. He's kind of like one of those guys who seems to get old really fast.
Yeah.
He no longer gives you much of anything offensively. He's not the same defender he was. I don't see why you would make a move for Joakim Noah when the team this year isn't going to contend anyway. There's just no point.
This is going to be weird for you to hear, but I think Evan Turner is too important to.
You've come around, John.
Oh man, what has happened to me?
Evan
Turner has become too important to give up for a player like Joakim Noah. If you're going to get another guard that can help, or if Terry Rozier was ready, which he's not, then maybe. But yeah, I mean, I've come around. I've come around on Evan Turner to at least acknowledge that his presence, I'm trying to say good things here, his presence has a positive impact on the team.
John is a believer. Evan Turner, I think, in all honesty, he has flaws. Like, he's not an efficient scorer. He's not a shooter. He does a lot of help the Celtics. And I think he's become a much better defender than I would have anticipated him ever becoming on the Celtics. He really does do a nice defensive job now. He's aware defensively. He's active. He can guard multiple positions. And he is one of the few creators on their team. So,
yeah.
Evan Turner, too important to trade, says John Corrales.
Jesus. Everything I've thought about basketball is gone. It's all out the window. No, it's true. It's true. Because the Celtics, for all of their depth, they do lack a guy who can handle the ball and kind of create for others. And Evan Turner does have that ability to handle the ball and create for others. I mean, beyond Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas, I mean, who handles the ball? Who can distribute? Then you need him. Yeah, you know, I don't think he's a long-term guy, but right now he fits. He works within this system. So I'll leave it at that before I break out into hives. All right, yeah. we're gonna wrap it up, but before we do, let's take a quick trip up 95 to Portland, Maine, and take a look at what happened last night. James Young, 26 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 6 of 10 from 3, 9 of 18 overall. Jordan Mickey, 17 points on 7 of 15 field goals. A monster putback dunk. YouTube that. 9 rebounds, 5 block shots. Terry Rozier, 16 points on 5 of 10 shooting. 8 assists, 3 steals. The young kids are dominating in Portland. If you're in the Portland
big three.
Area... That's it. If you're in that Portland area, you find a way to get to one of those Red Claws games. You want to see these guys play basketball. It's worth the trip to go check them out, because as long as they're in Maine, they're, and we said this like a few shows ago, they are tearing up the D-League.
By the way, how bad is the D-League? Like, I don't mean that to demean Jordan Mickey, Terry Rozier, and James Young, but like guys who aren't rotation pieces in the NBA are just go down and tear up the league.
Yeah.
Like, just crush it. Like, Fab Mello is putting up 30, 10 and 10s. Jordan Mickey is killing it. James Young, like I don't know. The D League stats in the D League are hilarious to me. It's like anyone on an NBA roster can go down and get his 25 and just have a night. So that's not to demean what the young guys are doing there, but
no,
the D-League stats are outrageous.
Can you imagine if they a good player, like if say Steph Curry rolled an ankle or something like that, and they could, like, let's say they sent them down for a rehab stint, would he score like 150 points in the D-League?
He would score a lot of points in the D League.
He would score. He could break 100. If you put an all-star player in the D League, they could break 100.
Come on. 100?
Break 100. You, 100, James Young had 26 points. Steph Curry could break 100.
100, John.
100 points. Steph Curry could go to the D League and score 100 points. Or maybe it'd be, have to be somebody like DeMarcus Cousins, who could just go and dominate down low and just keep getting to the free throw line. And score like 40 from the free throw line. But somebody, you're right though, the D-League is bad. People, it's not like baseball's minor league system where there are like 20 levels and AAA is a bunch of guys who are sort of major league ready. So, I mean, there are definitely guys in baseball who are only AAA, or the so-called quadruple A players who dominate AAA but can't play in the majors. But generally, if you're looking at minor league systems, the guys who are really good at that level below the pros in baseball or hockey are generally going to come into the pros and be at least decent. In the NBA, this is all they have. There's no multiple levels. There's no nothing. And we're lucky. We don't even have one D-League team for every NBA team yet. So this is still a work in progress. There are so many guys in the D-League who are nowhere near NBA ready. They're guys who are, you know, Division I guys who still holding on to some sort of dream that will never, ever, ever, ever see any NBA ball at all. I mean, hell, you tried out for the D-League and almost made it.
I wouldn't say I almost made it. I almost survived. Almost. But,
you know, I mean, look, the guys, any D-League guy can come into your men's league and score 50 a night and be dominant. They're still good players in, you know, relatively speaking, but they're mostly nowhere near NBA talent. They're in fact, I would even say if they were that good, a lot of these guys would be playing overseas. But and some of them could play overseas. They're just choosing to be stateside so they can, because their dream is to play in the NBA. They don't want to be, you know, in the Chinese league their whole lives. But I think some of these guys aren't even good enough to play in those overseas leagues. So, but still nice to see. All that being said, if you're not dominating that competition, then there's a problem. And these guys are dominating that competition. If they went to the D League and sucked, then you'd be like, oh no, that's a problem. So when you're facing that level of competition, Jordan Mickey better be having 5 blocks a game. You know, James Young better be doing what he's doing. At least there's some hope that, okay, we know that they're good enough to go, you know, squash the scrubs. Let's see if we can come back and play against the big boys.
Yep, that's
it.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed. There we go. Celtics are 7-5. They're playing. They have the number one ranked defense. Uh-huh. Number one ranked defense. Better than everybody. And they've got Brooklyn again on Sunday. Just making that draft pick a little better. Preferably with another 20-point victory.
Yeah. I like it. And we'll be back here next week talking about something completely new. And I might say nice things about Evan Turner again. Maybe. Or maybe he'll trigger me and I'll think he sucks again. That'll be
one. It's a roller coaster ride with you and Evan Turner.
It really is.
Depending on the day, you're either like, Evan Turner is untradeable, or Evan Turner is the worst thing to ever happen to the Boston Celtics.
Give him a max extension. No, 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 never that. All right, we've clearly gone off the rails, so we're going to end it here. Thanks for listening. Really want to say one more thing that we appreciate, that every week, a few more listeners hop on. We appreciate that you're doing that. Tell your friends. Tell your not friends, tell your enemies. I don't care who listens, whatever, as long as they listen to the show. And we'll see you next week on another Rain and Jays podcast. Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. Streetlight fever.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.